We're holding on Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph, sixth line. We mentioned in the Mishnah that on Yom Tovim, the Azara would already be filled with Jews from a very early morning, even from before Kreis HaGever, even from before, and then the Gemara had brought two opinions what Kreis HaGever is, what Kreis HaGever is. One is that it's when Gvini Kores, the announcer in the Bais Mikdash, would announce that it's time for the Kohanim to get up, and for the Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim to get up for their respective Avodas. And the other opinion was that it meant when the rooster crows. So even before that point, on the Shalosh Regalim, you'd already have the Azara filled with Jews that came, who came to bring their korbanos. And a different explanation is also that on Yom Kippur, you'd have people coming very early in order to watch the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, B'shashi Yisrael Olam L'Regel, when the Jewish people would be Olam L'Regel on the Shalosh Regalim, Omdim Tzfufim, they would stand in the Beis Mikdash very crowded. Rashi points out over here an interesting thing. Where does the word tzfufim come from? He relates it to the word tzof, which means floating, because there were so many people over there. Everybody's so crowded. Everybody's pushing, and there's no room to move from one place to another. So even a person's feet wouldn't even necessarily be on the ground. Any of us who were in 770 in the old days have an idea of what Rashi is describing over here. So literally a person might be tzof, a person might be floating off the ground and his feet not even touching it. That's how crowded it was. But when it came time for them to bow, then a nest would happen, and all of a sudden they would have plenty of room. They would have four amos between one person and the next. Rashi says this way a person doesn't hear the other person's vidui. Which there's an interesting discussion that the Achronim have. What vidui are we talking about? If we're talking on Yom Kippur, then that's not Ola L'Regel. And if we're talking about on Yom Tovim, why is a person doing vidui? Why is a person bowing and doing vidui in the first place? So there's a few possibilities. Maybe indeed we are talking about on Yom Kippur as well. And then, of course, everybody's saying vidui as part of their davening. Maybe it is talking about on the Yom Tovim, and okay, you don't have vidui as a standard part of tefillah, but a person is coming to the Beis Mikdash, maybe for the first time in a while, especially not everybody, everybody has a mitzvah being of Aliyah L'Regel three times a year, but in Masechta Chagiga, it talks about various possibilities why a person might be potter, so it could happen that a person hadn't been there for some time. Anyway, he's obviously going to use the opportunity to daven to Hashem for whatever he needs. And part of that is also going to be to do vidui and ask Hashem to forgive him his averus. So therefore there's that. There's also a vote from the Revelvel Brisker says that actually even on the Sholosh Regalim, on Yom Kippur, people would bow, as we learn later on in the Masechta, as we say in the Seder HaVod Yom Kippur, that's when everybody would hear the Kohen Gadol saying Hashem's name, which we do Kodim nowadays to evoke that. But on Yom Tovim also, we say in davening, we'll come up and we'll be seen before you and we'll bow before you on the three Yom Tovim, because every time a person comes to the Azara, they have a mitzvah to bow to Hashem. So therefore, while they're bowing, they're also doing vidui, and therefore they need room for that. Anyway, continues Rabbi Yehuda, v'nim shochen achas esrei ama achore beis hakaporis. They were extended out. In other words, the crowd was all the way behind, within the 11 amos behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, between the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the western wall of the Azara. So the Gemara says, my comma, what exactly is Rabbi Yehuda saying? So that part about the 11 amos, in other words, Rashi explains like this. Ezra Yisroel consisted of a strip 11 amos wide by 135 amos long. When you first come into the Azara, into the main Azara, through Shaar Nikanor, the first strip you have in front of you is the Ezra Yisroel, and that's usually where the Yisraelim are supposed to be. But over here, there were so many people that they would end up going along the northern and along the southern walls of the Azara and extend out from that area, and they'd wind up. Some of them would wind up actually behind the Heichel, in the 11 Amos between the back wall of the Heichel and the west wall of the and the western wall of the Azara. But the Gemara asks, my Kamar, what is he saying? If we're saying that there was a nest that they were able to bow with plenty of room, then why are we saying after that that they're crowded even behind the Beis HaKaporis? So the answer is Hachakama. That's what he means. Afalpishin Mishachan Achas Esra Ama Achoda Besakapodas. Even though there was such a large crowd that they couldn't all fit in the Ezra Yisrael, and they had to continue along the northern and southern walls of the Azara and go all the way along the sides and all the way to the back behind the Heichel, and even though, and even though they're standing together, so crowded, so packed together, and so even that some of them are not even standing on the ground, like Rashi says, nevertheless, even with all of that crowd, when they bowed, then they would bow with plenty of room. And in fact, Rashi adds, there was a further ness over here. When it came time to bow, everybody would be able to be on the eastern side of the Mizbeach. So you have all the ones who are further west, all the ones who are along the northern and southern walls, and all the ones who are along the western wall, the Derech Nes, when it came time to bow, would be able to come to the eastern side of the Azara, so that they're in front of the Mizbeach, so that they're able to bow towards the front of the Heichel, and a Nes would happen, and there would be plenty of room for all of them. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz has an interesting word on this in one place, I think, in Yaris Dvash. He says that the Gemara in Brochas tells us that sometimes when a person feels that there's a tremendous crowd, for example, at a drosha, at a yomtiv drosha or something, or like we remember from 770, what it is there are shadim pushing against him. So therefore, the vote would be when people felt so crowded in the Beis Hamikdash, it could be because of that. But when they're bowing to Hashem, acknowledging that Hashem is the only power in the world, then that automatically makes the shadim disappear. Therefore, they had plenty of room. Anyway, continues the Gemara. This is one of the 10 nisim that happened in the Beis Hamikdash. We learn in the Mishnah in Ovis. It's going to be this coming week's, this coming Shabbos, Pirkei Ovis. There were 10 nisim that took place in the Beis Hamikdash. A woman never miscarried because of the smell of the holy meat. Because you think about it, you have meat burning on the Mizbeach all the time. You also have the Kohenim are cooking and eating or roasting or eating whatever, the meat, the Kodshim that they have to eat in the Azara. All over the rest of your Shalayim also you have Kodshim being cooked. Not always. A pregnant woman is not going to be allowed to eat from those. She can't eat from what's on the Mizbeach. She can't eat from what the Kohenim are roasting for themselves in the Beis Hamikdash. And even in the rest of your Shalayim, she might be Tomei or whatever. Now, a pregnant woman, if she has cravings, it can be very dangerous. It can cause her to miscarry. But here, a Ness happened that never happened, and it never harmed her. We're going to learn at the end of the Masechta, in the last Perek, what happens, for example, if a woman smells food on Yom Kippur, if a pregnant woman smells food on Yom Kippur, what we do in order to feed her, in order that it doesn't endanger her and the baby. So here, you didn't have that. Number two, v'lo yisriach b'sar ha-kodesh ma'olam. The second thing is the meat of the kodshim never spoiled. Not only, you have certain korbanos that you can keep for 2 days, like shlomim, and remember they didn't have refrigerators in those days. You also have, for example, on top of the mizbeach, you have pieces of the korbanos on top of the mizbeach, where sometimes it could take a long time before they get burnt. Nevertheless, none of them ever spoiled. The next one, v'lenira zvuv b'beisam et b'chayim, no flies were ever seen in the beisam et b'chayim. You had in the beisam et b'chayim, the area of the Azara that we learned about the other day, where you have the tables and the pillars and the hooks and everything you have. I mean, the place is a shlachtoy. You have animals are being cut up over there. You have blood. You have everything. You would think that there a lot of flies would be attracted. No, nothing doing. Marsha explains, we find in Gemara's elsewhere, in Brachas, for example, that no flies being attracted to an area shows the high level of Kedusha over there. For example, the Gemara says there that Elisha's food, that when Elisha was eating, no flies were ever seen by his part of the table. So the same thing over here. Next, v'le'ira keri the Kohen Gadol v'yema Kippurim. It never happened that the Kohen Gadol became Tomei from Keri on Yom Kippur. Now, other kinds of tumas, Tosfos Yeshanim points out, other kinds of tumas could happen. We're going to have examples later in the Masechta where, for example, a Kohen Gadol became Tomei because he was talking with a Goyish king and the guy squirted some saliva on him by mistake, and the saliva of a Goy is considered like the saliva of a Zav, so it's Metamehim. So that could happen. But tumas keri is very Meguna. It's a very degrading thing that their tumas should come out of the Kohen Gadol's own body, and therefore a Ness would happen, and that would never happen. Now, we did learn in the last couple of blot that they took a lot of precautions to prevent that from happening. They made sure that they made sure he doesn't eat certain foods. They kept him awake all night. So you could argue in that case, then what's the real need for a nest? So the Medrash Shmuel of Pirush on Masechta Avos explains that what it is sometimes, you know how when you have a fight going on, you on one side realize it's about to lose, then he rallies with his last strength to be able to one final push. So the same thing over here, precisely because yes, they took all those precautions, but nevertheless, it is Yom Kippur, and the Satan knows that if he doesn't do something, then the Kohen Gadol is going to be able to do his avodah on Yom Kippur and be mechaper for the Jewish people. Therefore, he's going to make one last big effort to try and make it happen. Therefore, there is still the real possibility of Keri, and therefore we need a nest to prevent that from happening. With that said, though, on the other hand, the Marsha brings from the Yerushalmi that maybe primarily these Nisim were only in the first Beis Hamikdash, not necessarily in the second. Maybe, in fact, and for that reason, in the second Beis Hamikdash, they had to take all these precautions because sometimes it would happen that the Kohen Gadol would become Tomei with Keri, but not in the first. Okay. Next, continues the Mishnah, V'leinimsa psul ba'oimer. They never found a problem that would make the oimer posul, or v'shtei alechem, or the shtei alechem on Shavuos, or v'lechem aponim, or the lechem aponim on Shabbos. And the point is, Rashi says, because if any of those things became posul, then it would be very hard to get another one. The oimer, for example, they harvest the grain for it on Metzoyah Yom Tov, on the night after the 15th of Nisan, so they can bring it the next morning on the 16th. They generally only harvest exactly as much as they need in order to get out of it, in order that they're going to get, after they sift it, the number of times they're supposed to sift it, they're going to get one isarin of flour, which is needed for the korban. So if it becomes posel, then they don't have other grain that they generally don't have other grain that was harvested. Sometimes the ritva writes, sometimes they would, but generally not. Principle, if it came to that, they could do a new harvest the next morning if it came to it, but then that would delay things a lot. They might not even have time to finish it. After all, like this, they harvested it by night normally, and it took all the way until the morning. All the preparations took till the morning until it was ready. So now, if in the morning they find it's possible, it's tomei, whatever, and they have to bring a new one, then they might not be able to bring the omer until almost the end of the day. So therefore, ness happened, and there was never a psul in it. Same thing with the shtei lechem, because it's on Yom Tov, and you can't bake new ones. Same thing with the lechem aponim, because it's Shabbos, and you can't bake new ones. And if you did, then the shulchan would have to be empty until next Shabbos, because the only valid time to put the lechem aponim on the shulchan is on Shabbos. So therefore, ness happened, that there was never any problem with those things. The next one is what we said, that the people would be standing in the Beis Hamikdash very crowded, but when it came to bow, then they would have plenty of room. The next one is, no snake or scorpion ever harmed anybody in Yerushalayim. Which Marsha explains that other kinds of death, obviously, I mean, Yerushalayim is not a place where people are guaranteed against dying, but at least a snake, which represents the idea that the person is dying only because of chet etzadas, a snake, those kinds of things did not happen in Yerushalayim. Some of the Mephoshim even say that Lashon we have over here, V'lohizik nochash v'akar v'shlaim me'olam, means even after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, nevertheless, a person never gets harmed in Yerushalayim by a nochash or an akrav. And the last one is, nobody ever said to somebody else, the place is too narrow for me to stay in Yerushalayim, which means Rashi says, for example, he would say, I'm having a hard time making a living, or I have a very small house and I can't live in it, and I'm going to have to find someplace else bigger to live. Nobody ever said that, especially, we mean, even during the Shalosh Regalim, you had millions of people coming into Yerushalayim, and nevertheless, and then they have to stay over, Marsha points out, Sha'ol. You have the halacha is when a person brings a korban, they have to stay overnight in Yerushalayim. Nobody ever said there's not enough room for me, I can't stay here. Because Bederach Nes, Yerushalayim was big enough for everybody. So the Gemara asks, Pasach, while we're mentioning that Mishnah, let's analyze it. Pasach b'mikdash v'siyim b'Yerushalayim. The Mishnah is beginning asar nisim nasu b'veis ha-mikdash, and yet some of the things that it's listing, the last couple of things about the snakes and the scorpions and about those people always had room, is in Yerushalayim, v'siyim b'Yerushalayim. So what's going on over here? We don't have 10 nisim in the Beis Hamikdash. So there is. So the Gemara is going to give an answer. The Gemara is going to substitute two other ones. There's actually a sicha from Tavshin Lamed Ches where the Rebbe analyzed this and said, I mean, at least on a pshat level of the Mishnah, the question is not really that strong, because what it is you could say that the nisim that we're talking about over here, yes, some of them took place in Yerushalayim, but they're all outgrowths of things in the Beis Hamikdash. And he says not only the last two, the Nachash Va'akrav is because of the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash that's in Yerushalayim, and the Loyom Adam L'Chaveira means even though a person is staying in Yerushalayim because of the Beis Hamikdash, nevertheless, it wasn't too crowded and uncomfortable for him. Some of the other ones we have in the Mishnah also. The Lohi Pila Isha Mireach Psara Kodesh, again, is not just in the Azara, it's throughout Yerushalayim, wherever they're cooking or roasting meat of Korbanos. Loisirach b'sara kodesh ma'olam is also in the rest of Yerushalayim. So at least on a pshat level, when you're learning the Mishnah, the question is not necessarily that strong because it means nisim that happen in the Beis Hamikdash as a result in Yerushalayim as a result of things that are going on in the Beis Hamikdash. But the Gemara still wants over here to understand that we want to have 10 nisim that actually took place in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says, "Ika tarti achra naisa b'mikdash." The answer is that there were actually another two that took place specifically in the Beis Hamikdash, which the Mishnah did not list. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. May oilam lekibug shamim eish shal atzei ha-ma'arocha. The rain never put out the fire of the ma'arocha on the Mizbeach. And the second one, va'ashana ma'arocha. And the second one is that the smoke of the ma'arocha, afilo koloruchos shabu oilam bois and menash visboi, even if all the winds in the world come and blow on it, in mezuzah soisimim kaima, they would not move it from its place. So the smoke would always be going up. So those were two more nisim. Now, actually, our version of the Mishnah, if you look in any printed Pirkei Avos, including in the Siddur, including in Mishnayos, whatever, you'll find those two are listed in the actual Mishnah. So what's going on over here? So Rabbeinu Chananel says, okay, what happened is once the Gemara explains that those two belong in there, then later on they added them to the Mishnah. On the other hand, Rashi on Pirkei Avos and the Ritva over here say that no, what it is that's actually a mistake. All versions of the Mishnah should not have those two, like we say in the Gemara over here. And then what it is how would we still reach the number 10? Because like this, we were assuming that the Omer, the Shtei Lechem, and the Lechem Aponim count as three, or count as one. No, count them as three. And then you have 10 without having to count these other two. Okay. So the Gemara asked for two lekka. You're telling me there were no other nissim in the Beis Hamikdash? V'hatanu Reb Shmaya b'Klanvoy. Didn't Reb Shmaya teach a braisa in Klanvoy, is the name of a place in Babel? Shivrei klecheres nivloin b'mekoyman. The broken pieces of klecheres in the Azara were swallowed up in their place. Namely like this. The Torah tells us in Parshas Tzav that if you cook a chatas, in an earthenware keli, afterwards, eventually, what was absorbed into the keli becomes noiser. So therefore, you can't kasher the keli. You have to break it, and the Torah tells us you have to break it in the Azara. In Zvachim, you have a perek over there that deals with the details of these dinim. You have to break it in the Azara, and apparently, what it is once it was broken in the Azara, you weren't allowed to take the pieces out. Tosafos Yeshanim actually wonders why not. Where do we see that you can't take them out? But apparently that's how it is. Apparently the Gemara is assuming that you weren't allowed to. Now the problem is over time, then the Azara is going to become like a garbage dump. You're going to have pieces of broken earthenware all over the place. So a nest would happen and they'd get swallowed up into the ground where they were broken. For Amar Abaya, Abaya also says Mura v'noitza. Also the Mura v'noitza, the parts of an Ola Sa'oif that were taken out, the crop, the stomach. Noitza means either the feathers or the ant or the food or the half digested food inside them. Whatever, those things were taken off an Ola Sa'oif and they were thrown onto the ground near the Mizbeach. So those, the Dishun Mizbeach HaPnimi, also the ashes and leftovers that were taken off the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Dishun HaMenorah, and the leftover wicks and oil and whatever that were taken out of the Menorah, all of those were also placed in the same place near the Mizbeach, and Nivloin B'mekoyman, all of those were swallowed up into the ground in their place. Now Rashi adds also the Trumas HaDeshen, also the spoonful of ashes that a Kohen would take off the Mizbeach every day, as we had yesterday in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, and as we're going to have at the beginning of the next Perek, beginning tomorrow, Bez Hashem. However, Tosfos disagrees with that. And say Rabbi Natam disagrees with that and says that no, the fact is in that case the Gemara should have listed it, and also for other reasons. Rabbi Natam argues that not necessarily. So maybe all these other things were swallowed up into the ground, but maybe the dishon mizbeach hachitzon was not, and it actually stayed on the ground over there. Whatever the case, the point is, so all of those things were swallowed into the ground. That was a nest. Why don't we list that in the Mishnah? The answer is psulei tlosa havu. Let's go back to the fact that there were three different psulim that the Mishnah mentioned never happened in the Omer, the Shtei Lechem, and the Lechem Aponim. So chashvinu b'chad. So instead of counting them as three, count them as one. Apik trei v'ayot trei. So therefore, you can subtract two. Now instead, you have room for now. Now, in other words, now you have room for another two. So therefore, so you can add now the ones about the fire of the Ma'arocha never going out by the rain and the smoke never being scattered by the wind, and there you have. So the problem is Yehochi Bluri Nami Trehavu. In that case, then you also have to count the We said like this, we wanted to find 10 that are specifically in the Beis Mikdash. So we said the last two then about the snakes and the scorpions and about nobody being too crowded to live in Yerushalayim, those are out of the picture anyway, we're going to assume, because those were in Yerushalayim, not in the Beis Mikdash. So that leaves us with that. So then we still say, how do we reach 10? Is by counting the psulim separately. Now, if instead we count the psulim all as one big mess, then we're saying we have room for two. So the question is, Yehochi Blui Nami Trehavu. In that case, what did we say? We mentioned two different things that were swallowed up into the ground. You have the shivrei klei cheres, the broken pieces of cheres, counts as one, because that happens anywhere in the Azara. All the things that we place near the mizbeach, the mura v'noitza of the ola sa'oif, and the dishon mizbeach apnimi and dishon amenora, all of those should count as one separate one. So therefore, trei havu. So then you have two. But the problem is, chashvinu b'chad, if you count them all as one, after all, it's all one nest that things were swallowed up into the ground, then you're gonna be lacking one, then you're down to only nine. So where's the 10 that we said in the Mishnah? The answer is ikanami achriti. There's another one that we haven't listed. A great nest happened with the lechem aponim, silukei kisidurei. When they took it off the shulchan, after it was sitting there on the shulchan for a week, it was just as hot and fresh as when they put it down over there a week earlier. Shenema, as the pasuk says, losim lechem chayim b'yom hilachay, to place hot bread on the day it was taken, meaning on the day that it was placed was the same as when it was taken. We learned about this in Shkolim. So that was another ness. So the Gemara asks. So we have 10. In other words, we can arrive at 10 that were specifically in the Beis Mikdash by subtracting the two about the Nochash Va'akrav and about Saudi Amokrim, because those were in Yerushalayim rather than in the Beis Mikdash proper. We put in instead the one about the fire not going out and about the smoke not being dispersed. Then in addition, we count the psulim when it says the omer, the shtei lechem, and the lechem upon him. We count that all as one, and therefore now we have the ninth one is that the things that were placed on the floor over there would get swallowed up into the ground, and the tenth one is that the lechem upon him would still be hot a week later. So the Gemara still with two lekkah. So you're telling me still there are no more than that? There's more nisim that happened in the Beis Mikdash. We have the following fact as a mesoda in our hands from our ancestors. Makam Oren Einim in Amida. The place of the Oren in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is not part of the measurement. That, in other words, the Oren was 2.5 by 1.5 amos. The Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Mishkan was 10 by 10 amos. In the Beis Mikdash, it was 20 by 20 amos. So let's say in the Beis Mikdash, if you measured around the Oren, you would find that there were 10 amos on each side, which means that if the length of the Oren is 2.5 amos, then that would mean the space has to be 22.5 amos wide. But it's not. It was only 20 amos wide. So the Oren was there and not there at the same time. It had a physical size, 2.5 by 1.5, but it didn't take up space. But derech nes that it, when you measured from each side of it, you would find 10 amos. So that's a nes also. And for Amar Rabbi Noi, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim Benesso Yomdin. Also, Rabbi Noi said in the name of Shmuel that the Kruvim were standing with Derech Nes. Now, we don't mean the Kruvim on top of the Aron, because obviously those are within the same footprint of the Aron. What we mean is the two large Kruvim that it says in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim, that Shlomo made two large Kruvim made out of wood, plated with gold, that stood on the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Pesukim describe that the wings of them were 20 amos, each wing was 5 amos, and you had 2 wings on one and 2 wings on the other, so they filled up the whole 20 amos, and therefore, so again, 20 amos, where's their room for their actual bodies? If each wing is 5 amos wide, then there's no room for their bodies in between. So they were also standing b'nes. Although the Gemara and Baba Basra discusses that and says maybe not necessarily. Maybe what it is, for example, maybe the bodies were in front of the wings, sort of like you have the wings on a chicken, let's say, where the bird's body sticks out in front of the wings. And the Gemara brings a couple of other possibilities how it could have been not b'derech nes. Whatever the case, the point is we see that there were other nisim over there, at least that Makom Ha'aron Eidim and Amida is definitely a nes. The answer is Nisi de Broi Kachoshiv, Nisi de Gavoi Loi Kachoshiv, because we're only listing Nisim that happen outside where people could see them, not inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where nobody could see it. So the question is, Yehoch Lachem Aponim Nami Nisi de Gavoi Hu, new, then the Lachem Aponim also is inside the Heichel. Okay, it's not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the fact is it's in the Heichel. Nobody's going other than the Kohenim is going into the Heichel to see it. So how do we call that a Nes? The answer is Lachem Aponim Nisi de Beroyu. As a matter of fact, the Ness of the Lachem Aponim, that it stayed fresh and hot, was actually a Ness on the outside as well. And we know that, and we know that because as background, Rish Lakish tells us, Maidichtiv, what does it mean? A Pasuk in last week's parasha, Al HaShulchan HaTohar. The Pasuk says that you should place the Lachem Aponim on the Shulchan, which is Tohar. So why do we have to mention the fact that it's Tohar? Miklal Shehu Tameh. That implies that the Shulchan would be able to be Mekabel Tumah. The question would be why? What is it about the Shulchan that's able to be Mekabel Tumah? On the face of it, Kli Eitz Ha'asu L'Nachasu, it's a wooden keli, which is made to stay permanently in one place. Now, of course, in the Mishkan, it wasn't. They carried it from one place to another, but that's, as long as the Mishkan is in a place, then it's considered that's its permanent place. The fact that they had to carry it from one place to another doesn't make it a Dover HaMetalto, because that's only in between places where it's supposed to be. And now Rashi explains that when what kind of clay eats on a kabel tumah, only if they're similar to a sack, because the pasuk mentions wood and a sack in the same pasuk, but we call clay eats a begeda or a sock. So therefore we make a hekesh. A sack is something that is moved from one place to another, whether it's empty or whether it's full. So a kli eitz also to be mekabel tumah. Now with this we learned about before in Masechet Shabbos, for example, that a wooden keli that's so large and heavy that you can't move it, with its contents is not mekabel tumah, because then it's not like a sack. So therefore, the same thing over here. If the shulchan is not being moved from one place to another, then it's not mekabel tumah. I, Rashi, and Tosfos say, what about the gold plating on it? The answer is the gold plating doesn't matter. Because the gold plating doesn't matter. The Mishnah and the Gemara talk about it at the very end of Chagiga. But the Gemara explains over there that there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that calls the Shulchan just eitz. HaMizbeach eitz sholosh amos v'idaber Elazar Shulchan ha'shelefnei Hashem. So therefore we see the Shulchan is called only wood. We ignore the gold plating, and therefore that doesn't make it be mekabel tumah. Or a different explanation is that the gold plating is bottle anyway. Whatever the case, the point is the shulchan should not be mekabel tumah according to the usual rules of tumah v'tahara that we're familiar with. So why does the pasuk have to stress that the shulchan has to be tahor? So that's the question. Any wooden keli that's made to be permanently in one place, that's not meant to be lifted up or moved, is not mekabel tumah, and it even blocks tumah from going to something else. In other words, for example, if you have tumah underneath it and you have something else on top of it, then it's not going to become tumah. So Rav Shlokesh says, Ela melamed shemagbihin oisel oler golim. So from here we learn the shulchan was in fact sometimes picked up and moved. They would lift it up in for the oler regal, va'omim lahem, and they would tell them, Ru'u chibaschem lifnei amokim, look how precious you are in front of the Eibishter, shesilukei kisiduroi. that the lachem upon him is just as fresh and just as hot when they remove it as when they put it on. So therefore, in other words, so even though the nest took place in the heichal, but because they would lift it up on the shalosh regalim and show it to the people outside the heichal, therefore it's considered a nest that took place outside the heichal, and therefore it can be listed at therefore it can be listed as one of the 10 nisim. Now, how would the people realize from that it's hot? So the Ritva actually says that they would actually see steam come off it. The Radvaz argues on that in one of his Shuvos. He says, come on, even fresh bread, you don't really usually see steam coming off it unless when you're cutting it. So he says what it is that when they distributed the lachem upon him to the kohenim, then everybody would be able to see that it's just as fresh as when they put it on there a week ago, so that they would be able to see the nest that way. In other words, what they would see is they'd see that the same lachem upon him that's on the shulchan now, okay, no steam is coming off it, but a few minutes later they would see that very same lachem upon him is being taken and distributed among the kohenim, and they could see that it was fresh and hot, so therefore that would show them the nest. Okay, the Gemara asked for two lekka. Still, so far we've answered that we're not listing nisim that happen inside the heichal where nobody could see it. We're only listing ones that happen outside. But still, the two lekka, you're telling me there are no other nisim that happen outside in the Mishmikdash. V'ha'amar Oshia, v'shar shabona shloime beis mikdash, when Shloime built the beis mikdash, not about komine megadim shal zahav, he planted in it all kinds of delicious fruits made out of gold. Now, to plant actual trees there would be also, l'sit alacha sheir kolait. So instead, he put up trees made of gold, that Vahoyim might see in Perisein Bismanon, and a nest would happen, and they would produce fruit in their regular time. So whatever kind of fruit was represented in a certain tree, however this tree was made, then it would produce fruit in the time when fruit of that kind is supposed to grow. Then when the wind would blow against the fruit, then they would fall down. They would fall off the trees. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Yir Ash Kalavon in Piria. Yes, the Pasuk says its fruit will its fruit, meaning the fruit of the Jewish people, should make noise like the fruit of the Levonin. Now, Levonin, Rashi explains, is another name for the Beis Mikdash. Like when Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want to see Haharatai Vazeva Levonin, he doesn't mean Levonin as in the country of Lebanon nowadays. He means he wants to be able to see the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, so we see that the Levonin had Paris, and the Rash is when the wind blows and the fruit bangs one against the other. So you hear a noise and then the fruit falls down. So David in this capital, it's in capital Ayin Beis, is hoping that the Jewish people should be as fruitful and as successful as these trees in the Beis Mikdash. And Marshall, by the way, points out, so why they have to wait until the fruit fell off, why don't they just pick it whenever they want it, is because regular fruit, you can see when it's ripe. Golden fruit, you have no way to see when it's actually ripe. So therefore, they had to have to wait until it falls off, and then they know that it's ripe. And what happened? Later on, the Gemara brings this also later on Daf Lamed Tes, and it says that the Kohenim would actually take that fruit, and they would sell it, and they would earn an extra living that way from selling those golden fruit. And continues the Gemara, when the Goyim came into the Beis Mikdash to destroy it, then those trees dried up. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ferach Levonin Umlal, the flowers of Levonin, again Levonin meaning the Beis Mikdash, are cut off. Marsha points out that the Midrashim say it differently. It wasn't when the Goyim came into the Heichel. It was earlier. It was when Menashe put an Avodah Zarah in the Heichel. Then at that point, this nest stopped and the trees dried up. So in fact, Yufei Naim at the end of the back of the Masechta says that maybe the Girsa over here should not be Chenichvesu Nochrim LaHeichel. Maybe this is one of those rare cases where the word Noch, where the proper word is supposed to be Avodah Zarah, instead it got changed to Nochrim, so it would be Uchsheichnisu Avodah Zarah LaHeichel. When they brought Avodah Zarah into the Heichel, then those trees dried up. And the Gemara continues, in the future, in the third Beis Mikdash, Hashem is going to return those, and again, you're going to have those golden trees producing fruit in the third Beis Mikdash. As another pasuk says, it will flower. It will definitely flower, and it will be happy. Af gilas v'ranin, it will rejoice and be happy. Kavod ha'levonin nitan lo, the glory of the levonin will be given to it. So again, levonin meaning the Beis Hamikdash, meaning that the Beis Hamikdash will have the glory that it used to have, the glory of being like the levonin and having trees that produce fruit. So that's a nest that happened regularly in the Beis Hamikdash. Why don't we list that as one of the 10 nisim? The answer is nisid kvi like a choshev. The answer is we're not listing nisim that are part of the actual that are Rashi says kvuin va'omdim tamid b'mkayman, that are always fixed in their place. In other words, they're like almost like part of the nature of the object that's there in the Beis Hamikdash. So these two, in other words, we're listing nisim. For example, let's say we said that a woman would never miscarry from the smell of the korbanos burning or the or being roasted or whatever. So in other words, it's not an intrinsic thing. You have there's the mizbeach. There are korbanos being brought on it regularly, and whenever it happened that a pregnant woman was there, a nest would happen that the smell of it wouldn't affect her badly. And the same thing with all the other ones. We're not listing things where you have a certain object in the Beis Hamikdash was constantly there, b'derech nes. That we're not listing. So these trees are constantly there and they're constantly producing fruit, b'derech nes. We're not listing that kind of thing. That's part of the structure of the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says, okay, hashta de'osis l'ochi. Now that you reach that point, you can say, oron ukruvim nami nisi dekvi, ninu. Then you can say, we don't have to say, like we said before, that we're not listing the nisim involving the oron and the kruvim because they're inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and nobody sees them. We can say that they also, we're not listing them because again, they're not, they're part of the regular structure of the Beis Hamikdash. As long as the oron is there, then makom oron einu min amida. As long as the kruvim are there, makom kruvim einu min amida. So therefore, we're not listing those kinds of nisim, and therefore, so we don't have to say now that we're distinguishing between nisim inside the heichal and outside it. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim asks, given that we're talking about the Oren and the Kruvim and whatever, obviously we're talking about things that happened in the first Beis Hamikdash. Now, later on in the Masechta, we learn other Nisim that happened. We say, for example, that when the Kohen Gadol would do the Gadol on the two Seirim, the Gadol would, or during Shimon HaTzadik's times, the Gadol would always come up on his right hand, which is a sign of Hashem's favor to the Jewish people. And if it happened during the time of Shimon HaTzadik, Alach Haskama V'Kama, we have to assume that it happened in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, when the Kohenim were on an even higher level. So Tosfos Yeshanim gives a couple of answers. One of them is that, first of all, maybe not necessarily, maybe not always in the first Beis Hamikdash did it come out. Second of all, he says that when it comes to the Oren and when it comes to the fruits, then you have, as long as they're there in the Beis Hamikdash, you have their nests. But as far as these things, we're saying that they only happen at certain times. They only happen at certain times. In other words, you have on Yom Kippur, then this would happen, but no, not during the rest of the year. He was trying to list things that happen at many different times during the year. Okay. Now, Omamar, now we said it earlier, v'ashan ha-ma'arocha, we said one of the nisim was that the smoke of the ma'arocha was never scattered by the wind. So the Gemara asks, "So, mihava oshan ma'arocha? Since when did the fire on the mizbeach b'chlal have smoke?" V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, "Chamisha dvarim nemru be'esh ma'arocha." There are five things that the Chachamim said that were unique about the fire on the ma'arocha. Number one, revutza kari, it was crouched there like a lion. So Rashi explains how does a fire come to be shaped like a lion? What it is in Shlomo HaMelech's times, when the fire came down on the Mizbeach, it came down as a big coal, as a gigantic coal that landed on the Mizbeach, and it was shaped like a lion. So you could actually see the form of a lion over there from this large coal. Again, until Menashe brought up a Zara into the Heichel, and then that went away. So that was number one. Number two, Barakachama, the light of it was as clear and pure as the sunlight, not like a regular flame. A regular flame is sometimes brighter, sometimes dimmer. Here it was a very clear, pure, bright light. Number three, Vyeshba Mamash, the fire actually had mamashus, the flame. You could actually you could feel it had a substance in it. A regular flame is just heated air. So you don't have, so there's no actual substance in it. Here it had actual substance. Number four, va'ichelas lachen kiveshin, it would consume moist things just as much as dry ones. So for example, you had, there were the nesachim that were poured on it and it was able to burn them just as well. You had fresh meat of korbanos that was put on it and it was able to burn them just as well as dry wood. Even the wood itself wasn't always completely dry and it would be able to handle all that. And number five, enamala oshen, it didn't produce smoke. So there's no smoke. So what are you talking about that the smoke wasn't dispersed by the wind? The answer is kikamun and bidahedyet. Yeah, but the smoke that we're talking about is the smoke that came from the fire of a hedyet that was added. Netanya, as we learn in a brisa, when the pasuk says v'nostim b'nei Aaron Hakohen eish al mizbeach, that the sons of Aaron Hakohen should place fire on the mizbeach, that means afal pisha eish yoredes min hashamayim, even though fire comes down on the mizbeach min hashamayim, mitzvah lahavi min hahedyet, there's still a mitzvah to bring regular hedyet fire, and as we said, you had the fire in the Beis HaMoked or the fire in the Shaar HaMitzvot or whatever that they would bring to relight that. So that was regular fire. So that didn't have these special qualities. So therefore, that produced smoke. And that's what we're saying, that a nes happened, that smoke wasn't dispersed, which I think the Rambam explains that the point of that nes was otherwise that would be very difficult to breathe in the Azara. You have smoke constantly there on the Mizbeach. If the smoke would get dispersed by the wind, like regular smoke, then anywhere you go in the Azara would be smoky and it would be hard to breathe. So that's why you had this nes. Okay. Now, we said one of the five things about the fire was revutzakari. It was crouched on the Mizbeach like a lion. And by the way, you have the Zohar makes a big deal of this in a number of places, and it associates it with the idea, Arya de'ocho korbanin, you have like the lion that would consume the korbanos, and it associates it with the lion, which is one of the faces in the Merkava, one of the faces of the Chayas in the Merkava. So we're saying that it was like a lion. So the question is, Vahatanya, Omer Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohenim, Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohenim, who lived at the end of the second Mishmikdash and lived through the Churban, he says, Ani Re'isiha, I saw the fire on the Mizbeach, Urevotze Kakelev, and it was crouched over there like a dog. So like a dog, not like a lion. The answer is, Lekasha, Kan Mimikdash Rishin, Kan Mimikdash Sheni. The difference is, the first Mishmikdash versus the second Mishmikdash. Now, why was there that difference? Marashah explains the first Beis Mikdash was sponsored by Shloimer, and Shloimer is from Yehuda, who is compared to a lion, Gur Ari Yehuda. On the other hand, the second Beis Mikdash was sponsored by Kodesh, and they have a certain association with dogs, which are not such important animals. You have a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, for example, that mentions that the Persian kings would keep dogs for purposes of Znus. There's actually some places where there's actually some places, I think in Yosifun or something, where it says that the name Kodesh itself actually comes from a Persian word meaning a dog. So therefore, the fire on the Mizbeach that was sponsored by him was shaped like a dog. So the Gemara asks, was there b'chlal a special fire min hashamayim in the second Mishmikdash at all? What does it mean in a pasuk that the Navi Chagai says you have to build the second Mishmikdash? And ve'eretzaboy ve'ekovda, Hashem says, I will desire the Beis Mikdash, and I will be honored in it. Now, you have a kriyoksiv over there. It's written ve'ekoved, without a dalad, ve'korinen ve'ekov ve'ekovda. And we read it ve'ekovda, with the hay at the end. So what is it? So why do we have the kriyoksiv? Why is the hay missing in writing? So ma'ishno de'mechose hay. Elu chamisha dvarim shoy ben mikdash rishon lemikdash sheni. This represents the five things that were missing from the first Beis Mikdash to the second Beis Mikdash. The elu hein oren v'kaporas, oren v'kaporas of kruvim. Those count all as one. The oren together with its kaporas and the kruvim that were on it. So those all count as one. Number two, Eish, the fire on the Mizbeach, Ushchina, the Shechina didn't rest in the second Mizbeach to the extent that it did in the first one. As we learned earlier on Daftes, Daf Yod, we had an argument between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan why that is. Rish Lakish said because most of the Jews didn't come up to build the second Mizbeach, and Rabbi Yochanan said because it was sponsored by a Goyish king, Kodesh, and the Shechina only rests in a Mizbeach that's sponsored by a Jewish king. Anyway, the Ruach HaKodesh, they also didn't have Ruach HaKodesh. Nevuah went away. Rashi says Nevuah went away. The last Nevuah was the second year of Daryavash. You find the Nevi'im, Chagai and Schaya, their Nevuos are dated the second year of Daryavash. Now, actually, Mesodas Hashas points out that actually you have in Sefer Zechariah, it mentions the Nevuah that he had in the fourth year of Daryavash. So he says maybe that's what the Girsa should be in Rashi, the fourth year, not the second. On the other hand, the Malbim on the Pasuk says over there that no, what it was is basically Ruach HaKodesh had gone away at that time, the second year of Daryavash, but in the fourth year of Daryavash, Hashaila came up, which they needed an answer from Nevuah. So therefore, as a one-time last thing, Hashem gave Zechariah Nevuah, and he was able to answer them. But basically, it went away in the second year of Daryavash, which is the year when they started rebuilding the second Beis Mikdash. So that's Ruach HaKodesh. And the fifth one is the Urim V'Tumim. Is the Urim V'Tumim were missing in the second Beis Mikdash. Now, what are the Urim V'Tumim? So usually we understand the Urim V'Tumim is the parchment with the name of Hashem that was inside the Choshen that would make the stones of the Choshen light up, as we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta. We're going to learn later on in the seventh Perek of our Masechta, and we're going to learn about the details of how you ask the Urim V'Tumim. Now, Tosfos over here says, there must have been Urim V'Tumim in the second Beis Mikdash, because otherwise, without that, the Choshen is not complete, and the Kohen Gadol has to have his eight clothes, including the Choshen. What it means is that they were there, but they didn't do their job. They didn't cause the stones to light up and give answers. The Rambam writes similarly, they made an Urim V'Tumim in the second Beis Mikdash, but they didn't answer. On the other hand, some of the other Rishonim learned that no, the Urim V'Tumim is not essential to the Choshen. You have the Choshen itself, as long as you have the fabric of the Choshen and the gold settings and the stones, and that's considered the beged, and you don't need the parchment inside in order for it to be a complete choshen. Whatever the case, so those five things were missing in the second Beis Mikdash. So one of them is the fire on the Mizbeach. So you see, therefore, that what is Rav Chanina Skana Kodim telling us that there was a fire min Hashemayim, but it looked like a dog? If now this Braisa says, if now we're saying Rav Shmuel Bar Inya is telling us that there was no fire min Hashemayim in the second Beis Mikdash at all, the answer is Amri. So the answer Ein Miyavahava. Yes, there was a fire min Hashemayim on the Mizbeach, Siyui Loi Messiah, but it didn't assist with burning the Korbanos. Unlike in the first Beis Mikdash, where the fire min Hashemayim helped to burn the Korbanos, and therefore it was able to burn fresh ones as well moist ones as easily as dry ones, etc. In the second Beis Mikdash, there was this fire over there, but it didn't actually accomplish anything. It was just there. There is, by the way, a vote in this connection we're saying about the five things that were missing in the second Beis Mikdash. In Megillas Esther, we have Laihud Maisa Oira Besimcha Vesasin Vikar. There you have an extra hay, because usually the wood would be Ur. The Gemara explains Oira Zutoira. And there's a vote on that says in the second Beis Mikdash, which the story of Purim happened only a couple of years before the second Beis Mikdash was built, they lost these five things. But on the other hand, they gained that during the second Beis Mikdash is when Torah Shabbat Peh was when most of the Torah Shabbat Peh that we have, it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu by Har Sinai, but most of it was explained and developed and clarified during the time of the second Beis Mikdash. That was the advantage that they got back to make up for the loss of these five things. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Shesh Ishes, saying there are six kinds of fire. Yesh echelas ve'ena shoisa. There's a kind of fire that eats, meaning that consumes solid things. Ve'ena shoisa, but it doesn't drink. It doesn't consume liquids. Ve'yesh shoisa ve'ena echelas. Then you have a fire the other way around that consumes liquids but not solids. Ve'yesh echelas ve'shoisa. Then you have the kind that consumes, that burns both solids and liquids. Ve'yesh echelas lachen kiyavashin. Another one consumes fresh things, moist things, just as easily as dry ones, like we said, like the fire of the Ma'arafa. The yesh eish doicha eish. Then there's a kind of fire that pushes away other fire. The yesh eish echelas eish. And then you have fire that consumes other fire. So what are these six? Yesh eish echelas ve'ena shoisa hodidan. Regular fire that we're familiar with. It consumes solids, but it won't consume liquids. You pour liquids into it, then it'll put out the fire. Even if it's a strong enough fire that they won't put it out, then at least it won't really consume them. They'll just evaporate. What kind of fire drinks but doesn't eat? Decholin, the kind of fire that a sick, when a person has a fever, they want to drink a lot, they don't have an appetite to eat. So in that sense, you could say that kind of fever, it consumes liquids, it doesn't consume solids. Next, a cheles v'shoy. So what kind of fire consumes both liquids and solids? De'elyo. That would be the kind of fire that came on Eliyahu. Is mizbeach dichtiv, because you have what it describes over there as hamayim asher b'ta'ola lichecha. You have in the psukim over there where Eliyahu is bringing the korban on Har HaKarmel. And he tells his talmidim to pour three buckets of water, three barrels of water over the korban and over the mizbeach and the wood and the trench that he dug around there. So the whole thing is soaked and covered with water. And then a fire comes down min hashamayim, and the pasuk says that it burnt up everything. And it licked up the water that was in the trench. So that's the kind of fire that consumes both solids and liquids easily. A chelas lachen kivation, what kind of fire consumes moist things as easily as dry ones? The maracha, that's the fire of the maracha that we said before, that you could be throwing on it pieces of korbanos that are full of blood and water and wetness and whatever, and it would still be able to burn them just as easily as dry wood, and the wood itself wouldn't always be so dry and still. Next, yesh eish doicha eish, there's a kind of fire that pushes away other fire. That is the Gavriel. That's the kind of fire that Gavriel has, where, for example, we had in Psachim, when Hanani, Mishael, Azariah were thrown into the fire, where Gavriel went down and cooled off the fire for them on the inside and heated up the fire on the outside, and with that burnt the goyim that had thrown them into the fire over there. So we see that Gavriel's fire pushed away the fire of the furnace, so it didn't harm Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. And v'yesh eish echelas eish. What kind of fire consumes fire? The Shechina, the fire of the Shechina. The Amamar, as we have a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara discusses over there how before Hashem created the world, so to speak, Nimlach, he consulted with the Malachim, and some of them were arguing that you shouldn't bother creating people because they're full of falsehood and they're full of other bad midas and whatever. And the Gemara says over there, Hoshit, Etzboi Beneim, Hashem, so to speak, placed his finger between them, Usrafon, and he burnt them. Which in Chassidus it talks about the idea, in other words, that he showed them a tremendous gilial, of course, higher than their level, and therefore that was mevatel them in tziusan. Because, like, for example, like you have what the Alter Rebbe explains in these days Tanya, that for example the light of Olam Abriya, even though it's already a light shacharat simtum, nevertheless compared to Olam Yitzira, it would be so tremendous that it would destroy it would be mevatel everything in Olam Yitzira and in Olam Asiya, and therefore we need another simtum. So here Hoshit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's by my name, represents that Hashem showed them a higher level of Gilui Elokus than these malachim are capable of experiencing, and therefore that burnt them and that was mevatel them. So we see that Hashem's fire burns and consumes other fire. And Marsha explains, you have six kinds of fire, we're saying over here. You can say, two of them are here on earth, regular fire and the fire of a sick person. Two of them are in the world of, two of them are in the in-between world, like the world between Gashmias and Ruchnias, meaning we said the fire of Eliyo Anavi, and then the fire of the Maracha, which come from higher places than our world. And then you have in the highest level, you have the fire of Gavriel and the fire of Hashem. So you have three different levels, and within each one, you have two representing Chesed and Gvura, respectively. Okay, so we said Vashana Maracha, filu kol haruchos shebaolam en mezizas oisim b'mekayim. We said the smoke of the Maracha, all the wind in the world would not be able to disperse it. So the question is, what do you mean? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, didn't Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi say that the smoke of the Maracha would move with the wind? B'metzoy yom tov achon shochag, at the end of the last day of Yom Tov of Sukkos, meaning Shmini Atzeres, where B'chag Nidonin Alamayim on Sukkos were judged about the water and about the rainfall for the coming year. So during the so on that day, Hakol Tzofin LaShana Maracha, everybody is watching the smoke of the Maracha to see which way it's blowing. Because that'll tell us that it'll be a simon for the rest of the year what the prevalent kind of wind is going to be throughout that year, and that's going to tell us what the weather is going to be like. Note to clap itself in if it was inclining towards the north, meaning in other words that the wind is blowing from the south. That means that during the coming year the main winds are going to be coming from the south. Therefore, aniim smechem u'balibatam atzev. Therefore, the poor people would be happy. The balabatim, who have fields where they grow the crops, would be sad. It means that that kind of year there's going to be a huge amount of rain because the south wind in Eretz Yisrael brings rain. So therefore, the fruit that they store away, the fruit or the produce, is going to rot. So the poor people are happy because it means, in other words, that therefore nobody's going to be able to store grain for a very long time. They're going to have to sell it quickly before it rots. Therefore, prices are going to come down tremendously. So the poor people are happy. They're going to be able to buy more food for their money. The rich people are upset because that means, in other words, they have to sell their produce at a big loss, because otherwise it's going to spoil. On the other hand, not a klapid dorim. On the other hand, if the smoke of the maracha is inclining towards the south, meaning that the wind is mainly coming from the north, the other way around, ani matzevim balibatim smechim. Then the poor people are sad and the rich people are happy. Then it means the other way around. It means there's going to be relatively little rain that year. Not little enough that there's going to be a drought, but little enough that therefore the produce is going to be preserved better. So the rich people are going to be able to store away the produce, and prices are going to go up. And then the poor people are going to be upset because it means that therefore prices are going up, and therefore they're going to be able to buy less with what they have. Not a klap in Mizrach Hakol Smechim. If the smoke of the Maracha was going towards the east, Hakol Smechim, then everybody would be happy, because then it means the wind is mainly coming from the west, and the west wind is very equable, very even. It brings exactly as much rain as is needed. So not enough to make the produce that's stored away rot, but not little enough that there's going to be that prices are going to rise. It makes for exactly the perfect weather, and therefore everybody is going to be happy. And if the smoke goes towards the west, then everybody is sad, because it means the wind is mainly going to be coming from the east, and the east wind is a very hot, dry wind that dries up the produce. So therefore everybody's sad. The poor people are sad because it means that there's going to be hardship as far as food, and the rich people are also sad because it means that their crops are going to dry up. So the point is, we see that the smoke did affect this, did affect the wind did affect the smoke of the Maharacha. So the answer is the ozov osi kedikli. What it means is the pillar of smoke from the mizbeach could sway back and forth like a palm tree. This nest was that it never dispersed like regular smoke when the wind blows on it, where it disperses in all directions. Here it would still stay straight and tall. It would just incline in one direction or another, like when the wind blows on a palm tree and makes it sway in one direction or another. The last thing, we said Omamar, Klap Mizrach HaKol Smechin. We said if the smoke of the Maracha was inclining towards the east, then everybody's happy, because it means the wind is coming from the west, the wind is coming off the Mediterranean, and therefore it's going to be a good wind, it's going to be good weather during that year. But we said Klap Mairav HaKol Atzevin. We said if it inclines towards the west, then everybody's sad, because we're saying that it means the wind is coming from the east, and that's no good, it's going to dry everything up. So the problem is, I have a contradiction. A braisa says Mizrachis la'olam yafa, the other way around. The east wind is always good. Ma'arabis la'olam kasha, the west wind is always bad. Ruach tzfonis yafa l'chitin b'shal shevir shlish. The north wind is sort of in between. It's good for wheat that it's grown one third of its growth, because at that point the wheat doesn't need much more rainfall. And we said the north wind makes that there's going to be less rainfall. So therefore, it's good for the wheat. It prevents it from overgrowing and spoiling. But it's bad for olives when they're sprouting, when they're blossoming, because olives, when they're growing, need a lot of rain. And we're saying that the north wind brings relatively little rain. Ruach dreimus, and the south wind is the other way around. It's bad for the grain when it's grown one third, because it doesn't need much rain anymore, and the south wind is going to bring too much rain. On the other hand, it's good for the olives when they're blossoming, because they need a lot of rain. And Rav Yosef, or some say Mazutra, said the Simonach, a way to remember which is which. Shulchan Batsafan and Menorah Bedarim. Remember that the Shulchan is on the north side of the Beis Mikdash, of the Heichal, And the Minota is on the south side. Therefore, high mabedi day, the high mabedi day. Therefore, the north wind helps with the grain, which is what the lachem aponim is made out of, and it helps, it promotes its growth. And the south wind promotes the growth of olives, which is where olive oil for the Minota comes from. So that helps keep straight. The point is, in other words, we see in this braisa that the east wind is good and the west wind is bad, exactly the opposite as in the previous, exactly the opposite as Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi said. The answer is, Lo'kasha, holon v'holohu. It depends whether we're talking about for us in Bavel versus for them in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, in Bavel, Bavel is already a very humid country. It has big rivers, it's low-lying. So therefore, an east wind, which dries things out, Adrabe is good for it. Let it dry things out a little so it's not quite so humid and moist. And then therefore it helps things. But in Eretz Yisrael, which Eretz Yisrael is already a very hilly country, a very hilly mountainous country, and it dries out easily as it is because it's more exposed to the wind. So therefore, an east wind is really bad for it. And then a west wind, vice versa, a west wind in Bavel will bring more moisture. And already they have plenty of moisture in Bavel anyway. They don't really need more. So therefore, it's bad for it. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, a west wind is good because Eretz Yisrael would dry out quickly. And therefore, the west wind that comes off the Mediterranean helps moisten things and freshen things up. Hadron alach shivas yamim.